Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
We can safely say that this is one of, if not the single worst airline meltdown that we've seen, you know, certainly within the last decade.
Alaskans are still stranded across the country as nasty weather keeps planes grounded. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, December 27th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, a new federal committee is working to change derogatory names on American landmarks.
Take the names that we consider derogatory to us, challenge that name using their definition.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Do you need health insurance? United Way Healthcare Navigators are here to help you understand your new Affordable Care Act coverage options and opportunity for savings. You can call 211 or text GETCOVEREDAK to 898-211 to connect to a healthcare navigator. Enrollment is open now through January 15th. Call 211 today. This message sponsored by United Way of Anchorage.
The sale of Alaska's largest natural gas utility has cleared its final regulatory hurdle. That means Canadian company TriSummit can move forward with the purchase of Enstar Natural Gas and its share in Cook Inlet's gas storage facility, an $800 million deal. Enstar has about 150,000 customers in Anchorage, the Mat-Su, and on the Kenai Peninsula, as well as elsewhere. For a decade, it was owned by AltaGas, which is also based in Canada. Enstar spokesperson Lindsay Hobson says little will change for customers when TriSummit takes over.
The cost of the transaction will not impact Enstar rates, and so the rates that customers pay will not be impacted until Enstar goes in for another rate case.
She says the company is bringing some services back that were previously done out of state.
While we have 200 in-state employees right now, we do expect to see that number grow slightly as we bring more finance and HR and IT functions back into the state of Alaska.
Enstar gets all its natural gas from Cook Inlet producers, most coming from oil and gas company Hilcorp. It's also a majority owner and operator of the Cook Inlet Natural Gas Storage, which stores gas during times of high production to save for times of low production. TriSummit will take over Enstar's 65% ownership in the facility's parent company.
And it will continue to be operated by Enstar employees through a management agreement between Enstar and CINGSA.
TriSummit, the new parent company, has 133,000 customers in Canada and had a net income of over $51 million in 2021 after taxes. The holidays were hectic for millions of Americans traveling to see loved ones or at least to see a change of scenery over the weekend. That frenzy extended to Alaskans, with many having their flights in hub airports like Seattle and Portland canceled. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has more.
'Twas the night before Christmas Eve, and Michael Mahmood was planning to visit his girlfriend's family in Denver for the holidays. He drove up from Seward to Anchorage, then he got an alert. His flight from Seattle to Denver was canceled. He went to the Anchorage airport anyway and saw the customer service line.
There was just a line that went from the stations all the way to the end of the airport, and it hit the back wall, and it was starting to curve. So I just walked out.
Soon after, his flights to and from Seattle were canceled. Mahmood got put on another flight for the next night. That flight was also canceled, and he was rebooked again on a different airline. However, that flight, too, was canceled.
The next available flight that the app showed me was until today at midnight, or right before midnight, so tonight. But I didn't want to be in Anchorage all through Christmas and yesterday. So I just drove home because I knew the weather was going to be bad, and so I drove home Saturday night.
Tens of thousands of travelers like Mahmood had their travel plans disrupted over the holiday weekend. Airlines canceled thousands of flights, mainly due to winter storms that caused havoc across the lower 48. Anchorage-based travel consultant Scott McMurrin described it as a, quote, perfect storm hitting the Pacific Northwest.
You had ice, snow, some freezing rain and some wind coming through in Seattle and Portland and even here in Anchorage.
While most delays occurred in airports in the lower 48, McMurrin says there were also weather issues in Anchorage, leading to several flights getting rerouted to Fairbanks instead. Trudy Wassel, deputy director at the Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport, says weather concerns in Anchorage included high winds and blowing snow, but the airport itself was better off than some in the lower 48.
The good news is the airport never closed. We have amazing operations, facilities, and airfield maintenance crews that kept this airport open and available for flights to land and take off.
The Seattle-Tacoma Airport wasn't so lucky, with several runways closing for hours over the weekend. Kyle Potter, executive director of travel and flight deal website Thrifty Traveler, describes the weekend as one of the most hectic travel seasons on record and the number of flights canceled as, quote, unprecedented.
We can safely say that this is one of, if not the single worst airline meltdown that we've seen, you know, certainly within the last decade, but probably ever.
Potter says one of the biggest culprits for hectic travel nationwide was Southwest Airlines, which canceled thousands of flights a day over the weekend. He says Alaska Airlines, the major air carrier for the 49th state and the Pacific Northwest, was a little less hectic, but there were still many cancellations.
Alaska Airlines has been, you know, struggling. You know, they've canceled 10 to 20% of their flights yesterday and again today.
Potter says he anticipates these types of issues continuing in the future as airlines work to fill high flight demand after shrinking their workforce during the pandemic. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Funding to buy a privately owned icebreaker was removed from the federal spending bill signed by President Joe Biden on Friday. The decision delays plans to possibly dock an icebreaker in Juneau. The U.S. Senate passed the National Defense Authorization Act earlier this month. It gave the government permission to spend $150 million on an icebreaker called the IVIC. The removal of that funding from the spending bill means the purchase won't happen, at least for now. But Juneau City Manager Rory Watt says that won't stop the city from planning to homeport an icebreaker in the future.
I think we still need to plan for an icebreaker, but you know, clearly it's not happening as soon as people thought.
A new icebreaker could bring close to 200 Coast Guard personnel and their families to Juneau, according to Senator Dan Sullivan. Sullivan voted against the spending bill. In a statement, he said removing the icebreaker funding undermines Arctic security. On a call with reporters Friday, Senator Lisa Murkowski called it a frustrating but temporary setback.
I think we will have yet another opportunity in this next appropriations bill going forward. And I'm certainly going to be pushing to advance that.
The IVIC would have been a temporary solution as the Coast Guard works to buy new icebreakers. The Coast Guard expects those to be ready in 2026 or 2027. The home port for those ships has not been decided yet, but Senator Sullivan has said Juneau is on the short list. And any day now, President Biden is expected to sign into law a bill that renames a volcano on a small Aleutian island after the late Congressman Don Young. Senator Murkowski says she knew Young's softer side, as well as the reasons for his volatile reputation. She says she and Senator Sullivan intentionally chose a volcano.
As we were looking for something that might be fitting, we looked not only at mountains, but we looked at mountains that continue to blow their top to this very day.
The mountain is west of Adak and comprises three volcanic cones. Its previous name, Mount Cerberus, was also named for a fierce creature. In Greek mythology, Cerberus was a hellhound, a three-headed dog that stood guard at the entrance to the underworld. Besides the mountain, the bill names a federal building in Fairbanks and a job center in Palmer after Young. Representative Mary Peltola is finishing Young's term in office. She said on the House floor last week that Young would probably like knowing that his name is on a job center uplifting future generations of workers.
Don always spoke fondly about his time working construction in Alaska, driving a D8 Caterpillar bulldozer, and he always looked out for people who worked with their hands.
The bill passed both chambers with no opposition. Once Biden signs it, the Board on Geographic Names has 30 days to rename the mountain. Google Maps, though, isn't waiting. It has already labeled the peak Mount Young. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, bouncing a radio signal from Alaska off a far-out space object.
The hope is if we get these systems working together, that then eventually we can probe the interiors of these asteroids.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Sneezing, aching, sweating, and coughing. Who has the time for this misery? You have the power to protect yourself and your community. Boost your defenses this season by getting the flu vaccine. Protect yourself and family. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
Environmental groups are suing the federal government over next week's federal lease sale in Cook Inlet, alleging the environmental analysis on the sale was incomplete and did not consider less harmful alternatives. The long-anticipated federal sale will put up for bid nearly 1 million acres and was previously canceled due to lack of industry interest. This time, it's required in federal law. Sue Mauger, director of Homer nonprofit Cook Inlet Keeper, says the environmental review process was hurried to comply with the end-of-the-year deadline.
Just because they were rushed to get this all done, that does not allow them to skip steps, and they clearly have.
She says the Interior Department failed to consider alternatives that could lessen the impacts of oil and gas development on wildlife, like auctioning off a smaller area of the inlet, for example. And she says the process does not take into account the requirements of the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, which sets the ground rules for environmental regulations.
We ultimately want no oil spills. We want minimal, if any, impacts to our whales and sea otters and fisheries.
It's unlikely a judge will rule on the case before the lease sale next week, and it's unclear what would happen to leaseholders if a judge were to make a ruling on the case next year.
Our hope is, first of all, that no one bids on December 30th. And the second option is for BOEM to realize that they rushed through a lot of things and haven't addressed a great many concerns, and that they go back and actually come up with a more reasonable environmental impact statement.
The Department of the Interior declined to comment on the suit. There's no guarantee oil and gas companies will even place bids in next week's sale. Oil and gas company Hilcorp has been the only company to bid on federal leases in recent years. The company recently announced it was rethinking its natural gas contracts amid uncertain supply. From the smallest of creeks to monstrous cliffs, you'll find names of places with histories that are racist, sexist, and dehumanizing. But a nationwide movement to heal some of those wounds is gaining momentum. As KNBA's Hannah Bissett reports, a new federal advisory committee is a part of those efforts.
Whether it be statues with indigenous names or creating committees to comb through place names, there have been many moves this year to get rid of derogatory language. Last month, the Department of Interior announced successful efforts to remove a racial slur used against Indigenous people from almost 650 geographic features. And the committee's work isn't over. On December 7th and 8th, the Advisory Committee of Reconciliation and Place Names met for the first time.
From the very beginning, the Biden-Harris administration has worked to tackle racial injustice and inequity.
Secretary Deb Holland hopes the committee will accelerate a critical process in derogatory place names.
That's why 1 year ago, I issued the secretary's order that created this advisory committee to help us ensure that America's public lands are welcoming to everyone.
In this meeting, they discuss what the term derogatory means, creating subcommittees, and detailing future plans. On the topic of the term derogatory, Federico Mosqueda, coordinator of the Afro Language and Culture Program, said the following.
We as a committee, we need to challenge this definition. I think that's what we need to do. We just need to take the names that we consider derogatory to us, challenge that name using their definition.
He says this is important to push the point home by using experience and emotion to express the inappropriate nature of these place names and their hurtful histories. The proposed subcommittees were the following: the federal land unit names, the geographic feature names, and the processes and principles subcommittee. Howard Dale Valandra, member of the committee and who works with the Tribal Land Enterprise Board of Directors, said the following.
that this is not a pickup game where everybody's staying on the side and we say, hey, you come play on our team. This is, I want to be on that team and I'm going to go over there and play.
The general public will be able to provide input and engage with the community's discussion by making written comments and attending virtual meetings. For KMBA News, I'm Hannah Bissett.
Metlakatla's ailing power grid got a boost on Monday after a new generator arrived, allowing authorities to roll back calls for power conservation. The community typically relies on its hydroelectric dam to power homes and businesses, but as a cold snap gripped southeast Alaska, leading more residents to plug in heaters, the community turned to its diesel generator to help handle the increased load. Then, on December 18th, the generator failed, causing widespread outages. Crews were able to restore power a few hours later, but the generator remained offline. That left Metlakatla with just over half of its power generation capacity intact. Officials called on residents to unplug or power down any non-essential devices, including Christmas lights. Metlakatla Mayor Albert Smith says he knows it was a big ask just a few days before the holiday.
I thank each and every one of them for sacrificing their lights and Christmas lights and stuff. And I was very, very happy to put out a notice on Christmas Eve that they could turn on their Christmas lights and the indoor lights and their Christmas tree and stuff as the weather had warmed up and the load had came down a little bit on the hydropower.
Smith says the community was able to secure an emergency rental generator on Monday through the Bureau of Indian Affairs and Sampson Tug and Barge. He says Metlakatla Power and Light crews got it hooked up shortly after it arrived, but by then it was only needed for backup since the hydroelectric dam was providing enough power to meet demand. It's a temporary fix. The new generator has just about half of the capacity of the broken down one. But Smith says for now the community can get back to normal, though he warns that power conservation might be necessary again if the mercury drops.
I'm sure we're going to have more cold snaps coming, and that's when the hydro system is being strained. You know, winter's just starting for us, so we gotta we're still going to have to continue to work and pull together, and I'm sure proud of our people for doing that.
Though it looked initially like the old generator had bitten the dust for good, Smith says Metlakatla Power and Light crews are disassembling the unit to see if repairs can be made. There's no word yet on whether it can be revived. In the longer term, Smith says Metlakatla is working to access grant funds it was awarded about a year ago to purchase a new permanent generator to backstop the grid.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from oversized equipment to small packages for commercial or residential. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
And by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, maintaining and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 45 years. More at alyeskapipeline.com.
And by
the Westmark Fairbanks Hotel and Conference Center, located in downtown Fairbanks, featuring hot breakfast, Wi-Fi, and a fitness center. Reservations at westmarkhotels.com.
A committee of the Alaska Legislature has approved spending $6.6 million to renovate a downtown Juneau office building into 33 apartments for legislators and staff. The Alaska Beacon reports that during the vote last week on the proposal, lawmakers said the state-owned building will help alleviate a chronic shortage of housing in the capital city during the legislative session. The cost of construction is also being subsidized by a Juneau-based foundation whose goal, at least partially, is to keep Juneau as the state capital. The Assembly Building, built in 1932, will be the legislature's new apartment building. Located kitty-corner to the Capitol, it was originally constructed as an apartment complex but was converted into offices in the 1980s. Renovations are expected to take a minimum of 1 year, with a tentative completion date in January 2024. It isn't yet clear how the building will be managed, who will be allowed to rent space, or whether legislators will forego their per diem expense payments if they have a state-owned apartment. In 2022, legislators were eligible for more than $300 per legislative day to cover food, housing, and other expenses during the legislative session. Those payments came on top of their annual salary of $50,400. The 9-2 vote by the Legislative Council to move ahead with the apartment plan passed with Republicans, Democrats, and Independents voting in support. Scientists in Alaska were bouncing a radio signal off an asteroid today. The experiment will be preparation for another close flyby in 6 years. KUAC's Robin reports.
There is a little asteroid that'll be close to Earth this week. Okay, close is relative. Right now it's about twice as far away from Earth as the Moon is. The high-frequency active auroral research program in Gakona, what Alaskans know as HARP, will transmit radio signals to the little rock named Asteroid 2010 XC15.
You know, there are lots of small asteroids that fly between us and the Moon. It happens about once a week.
Mark Haynes is the lead investigator on the project and a radar systems engineer at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
But this is the first time we're trying to do this with very low frequencies or very long wavelengths. And the difference is these long wavelengths, you know, can penetrate the interiors of the asteroids.
That's where HARP comes in. In spite of the name High Frequency Active Auroral Research, this experiment uses low frequencies. Haynes says HARP is the lowest frequency, highest power transmitter available for JPL and NASA to use. In the experiment, HARP chirps about every 2 seconds, sending radio waves up to the asteroid to bounce back to Earth.
They're going to steer their beam at the asteroid. We've got two radio observatories. One's in California, the Owens Valley Long Wavelength Array, and one is in New Mexico, the New Mexico Long Wavelength Array. They're both going to receive the signal. So HARP transmits, and these radio observatories, they're going to track it for about 12 hours.
This is the first time HARP's signals probe an asteroid. The experiment tests the potential use of HARP for sensing what's inside near-Earth asteroids.
The hope is if we get these systems working together, that then eventually we can probe the interiors of these asteroids as they come close.
Haynes says there's another flyby coming very quickly in 6 years. In 2029, asteroid Apophis will pass less than 20,000 miles from our planet's surface. That's closer than our geosynchronous satellites.
In 2029, Apophis will get very close. It'll be, you know, about one-tenth the distance between us and the Moon. And it's going to be a big event. And that's an opportunity that we have to try to actually probe the interior of the thing while it's flying past. These experiments with HARP and the radio observatories are kind of a rehearsal.
Haynes says it will take months to process the data from this week's asteroid bounce. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
In many indigenous stories in Alaska, Raven is a clever and enterprising character. That's the case in Tlingit storytelling. Wrangell students recently brought a story of Raven's antics to life with a Shadowbox theater performance. KSDK's Sage Smiley reports.
Tlingit stories tell of how Yesh, Raven, brought light to the world and helped ensure the tides rise and fall each day. One story of Raven and King Salmon also tells of Raven's trickery and gives some explanations for the markings and migratory patterns of birds in the region. The story is told by Catherine Mills and transcribed by Nora Marks Danhauer and Richard Danhauer. This fall, it was featured in a celebration at Wrangell High School. After the local dance troupe sang and danced the Wrangell Coming In song, the lights went out except for a large white sheet lit from behind. Beginning Tlingit students held cutout birds and fish shapes on strings to act out the story. Clara Waddington narrated.
Raven is going along the beach. While he was going along the beach, he saw the king salmon. It was jumping out there in the bay. He was thinking about it then. What can I do to that king salmon to trick him into coming ashore?
A As the story goes, Raven tricks King Salmon into swimming onto the beach and clubs the salmon in the head. He has the other birds, his grandchildren, help him move the salmon to a pit for baking, but tells them they have to go gather skunk cabbage from far away to line the pit. Then he eats the salmon all by himself and hides the evidence under a tree stump with only the salmon's tail sticking out. He tells the other birds the stump rolled onto the salmon and squished it.
Then, some of the little birds are crying. When they are wiping the white around their eyes, it turns black. But Robin sat close to the fire and scorched her belly, and it's the color of fire. The magpie is trying to fly away, and Raven holds her back, and he says to Magpie, "While there are still salmon in the creeks, don't fly down here. Only when there are no more salmon in the creek, that's when you fly down to the coast."
The class held the Shadow Box Storytelling in honor of Native American Heritage Month, which takes place in November. Local representatives from the tribal government, Alaska Native Brotherhood and Sisterhood, Tlingit and Haida, and community members came out in support. Tsutsukan Winston Davies introduced the play. He's the former Indian Education Director at the schools.
"This month and every month, we honor the precious, strong, and enduring cultures and contributions of all Native Americans, and recommit ourselves to fulfilling the full promise of our nation together."
Refreshments after the performance included fry bread, salmon dip, and whipped soap berries. Student Yish Dlak Mia Wiederspoon led the song for whipping the soap berries. Tlingit teacher Juan Tlain Virginia Oliver closed out the performance and asked the kids to let elders have first dibs on the fry bread.
"We just wanted to show our appreciation and our pride in Wrangell, Native people, and all Native peoples in the world."
I'm Sage Smiley.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Sabine Pooks in Kenai, Wesley Early and Hannah Bissett in Anchorage, Katie Anastas in Juneau, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Eric Stone in Ketchikan, Robin in Fairbanks, and Sage Smiley in Wrangell. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Madeline Rose is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil exploration and production and working to create economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources.
Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.